How badly did I mispronounce the plaintiff's name?
It's pretty close, you know, okay, it's good enough for me.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, for the record, I'm Ken Masters, representing the appellant, Lexine O'Tay. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The issue here is whether the trial court erred in granting summary judgment on Group Health's admitted practice of charging members 3 to 5 times the actual charge to GHC for low-priced prescription drugs, even though the insurance contract says that members must pay only the actual charge or the copay, whichever is less. Specifically, for a prescription that costs $3 to $5, GHC admits that its members are charged $13.65.
Don't we have to read the insurance contract as a whole and compare all the terms with each other to see what the intent here was of the parties in entering into this agreement?
Absolutely. And let me turn right to that. So we've identified 4 terms that we think are ambiguous, and they all work together to create what we think is an unfair and deceptive perception that there's cost sharing going on these drugs. So that you have cost sharing copay. Copayment under the terms of the contract, this is CP 190, is the specific dollar amount the member is required to pay at the time of service for certain covered services. Covered services are the services for which a member is entitled to coverage. So right now, with 2 phrases that are defined, their definitions, we know these are covered services. If you have covered services, you're entitled to coverage. Then you have copay, which is just a specific kind of cost share, right? It's the portion of the cost for covered services which the member is liable. All of those suggest that the member is paying a portion of the cost and that GHC is offering coverage for it. So a reasonable insured reading that would say, well, okay, I'm going to pay a portion and they're going to pay a portion. They would not expect, certainly, to find out that for a drug which costs $3 to $5, they're being charged $13 or $14 by GHC.
How would this analysis work? Because presumably a group health member can go to a group health pharmacy, but couldn't a group health member go to Rite Aid?
Sure.
And buy the prescription?
We don't. I don't know which particular, you know, but I believe there are some non-GHC groups. Well, if GHC met the terms of its contract, it could tell non-GHC providers that they have to charge their members the actual charge. Okay. An actual charge has been found by 9 different courts to be ambiguous. And so under Washington law, you have to give that the construction that's most favorable.
So I want to go back. So then GHC would say you have to charge your wholesale. You would have to eat your wholesale costs, basically, to Rite Aid or whomever.
Not eat your wholesale, pay. Charge your wholesale, but that not necessarily. If GHC wants to say, look, we need a charge in there, you know, pharmacies charge for a lot of things. They make their money in a lot of different ways. As a reasonable insured, it's not my responsibility to figure out what their business model is.
Right.
The point is that they could say to them, look, you can do the actual charge, can be this plus whatever reasonable markup you think, but they have to disclose it. Let me explain that. They use the same term. So let's take the Tier 1 drug. It's $15 copay. Okay. Now, there's plenty of Tier 1 drugs that are going to cost more than $15, and there's going to be a copay. There's going to be coverage, right? So you pay the $15 and then GHC, all of the members together, pay the difference. They use exactly the same term when they're under the copay. Even though the actual charge is $3 to $5, they say, oh, you've got a copay of $13 to $14. That's very deceptive to an insured. It makes, if you use the same term when there is an actual share that the insurance companies pay, you can't use the same term when there's not. It would be very easy to write this contract to say for low-priced drugs that are below the copay, we will charge you X plus Y, right? Or we will charge the actual charge plus a reasonable markup or something. There's a lot of ways to write this contract that wouldn't be deceptive. But the very fact that they use the same term when there is an actual copay and cost sharing as when there's not, you see, they're not getting any coverage. So what is covered? It says drugs, prescriptions, CP 107, drugs, prescription. Prescription drugs, I'm going to dot, 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 for a supply of 30 days or less. So throughout the briefing and in the trial court, you get this argument that, well, we didn't insure one bottle of pills. That's exactly what they insured. What is covered is a bottle of pills. And there will be a cost share and a copay for that bottle of pills. No reasonable insured could read that and conclude anything else.
Does it matter for purposes of appellant's argument that this is an HMO as opposed to an insurance company, quote unquote?
Well, Washington case law says that insurers are treated the same, and this is an insurance contract. I don't think that there's any case law that would suggest you would read the insurance contract differently because of the form of the company that you're dealing with. Frankly, I think that would be a mistake to adopt that kind of a rule. So in addition to the fact that we've got this obviously ambiguous language, which if you interpret it in our favor, you should frankly grant summary judgment to us, we've also got the problem that it says these drugs are covered. That's plain on the face of the thing, right? So even if you were to disagree with us that these are ambiguous and you have to give it a reading and you have to send this back with a summary judgment in our favor, you'd still have to remand the CPA and bad faith claims because they promise coverage and they admit there is none. There's no coverage for these low-priced drugs. The insured pays not only the $3 to $5, which is the actual charge, but a markup. So in addition to charging us a premium for this insurance, from which they're entitled to make a profit, they're actually, for folks who buy low-priced drugs, taking extra money from them. Now, that's terribly unfair and deceptive, and that's why you should reverse and remand for, frankly, entry of summary judgment in our favor and a trial to figure out what the damages actually are. If there are no questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Medora Morris on behalf of Group Health Cooperative. The issue here is whether or not there's two reasonable interpretations. And the way that the appellant got to this idea of ambiguity is to cherry-pick various phrases out of context. And I think we just start with really the very basic concept of what is this contract covering. It's insurance. Insurance is not cost-sharing. It's risk transfer. So if you pay a premium, the insurance company takes on the risk unless the contract has a provision in it for financial responsibilities for which the member is required to pay. And that is very, very clear. If you look at the table of contents, it talks about financial responsibilities of the member and it talks about what's covered. And so that's really the primary provision that you have to just focus on. And the financial responsibilities are those for which the subscriber or member is liable, and they include cost shares. What are cost shares? Those are defined. Deductibles, which is an amount for which the member is liable before any payment is made by the insurance company. Copays, that's the amount that the member is liable. It's a set amount. And then there's also the out-of-pocket limit, which I think is a very important concept in this case, because I absolutely do believe that if you have a bottle of pills for $13.75, it's below the copay, and that's what the member is charged, it's covered. Why is it covered, and how does that benefit the member? It accrues to their out-of-pocket limit. And so when they hit the out-of-pocket limit, they don't have to pay anything else. That's the portion for which they're liable, and the remaining portion is what the insurance company pays.
How about the actual cost provision, which isn't a defined term? Why would an ordinary consumer expect that when it says, I'm only going to get tagged for the actual cost, that means not the actual cost, whether it's wholesale or some other marked up cost, it's this other.
The actual.
Plus their markup as a prescription pharmacy.
Right. The actual charge, there's really two answers to that. The first one is you got to read the phrase in context. Where does that phrase appear? It appears under the financial responsibility section for which the subscriber is liable. That's number one. And look at this. The very first sentence, it says, it's describing the subscriber is liable for payment of the following cost shares for covered services. And then it says, payment of an amount billed must be received within 30 days of the billing date. So if you get a bill for a cost share, you have to pay it within 30 days. The very next sentence says, charges will be for the lesser of the cost shares for the covered services or the actual charge for the service. So charges, how do we understand what charges are in this context? Well, we know that it's charges that, you know, this whole section relates to the subscriber's financial responsibility. We've just talked about amounts that the subscriber is going to be billed, and the next sentence talks about charges. It only makes sense that it's charges to the member. And then that next phrase there, actual charge for that service, it has to mean to the member. And let's just think about this for a minute. It's completely anathema to our entire system that a wholesale charge would be what a member has to pay for anything. You take, for example, emergency services. There's a copay there of $100. And if someone goes to the emergency room and they see a doctor for 2 minutes and they have a cold and the doctor says, go take your Advil, don't bother me, the actual charge that the hospital bills that member, let's say it's $60. So you don't round up to the copay, you pay the lesser of. It would be so unworkable to think, well, what did the hospital actually pay for that doctor? We'll have to think. Now, his rate was maybe $50. They don't get to pay for the lights, all the rest of the things that keep the hospital working. Think about it in the context of prescription drugs. Plaintiff makes the really unusual argument that pharmacy services aren't covered services, which, of course, you have to have covered services if you have a prescription. You have to have pharmacy services covered.
So in answer to Judge Brown's question, you're saying that reading the four corners of the agreement, actual cost means actual cost to the member, not actual cost to group health.
Yes, and there's absolutely no way you can get to actual charge to group health, because then it also gets into the issue of Rite Aid and other pharmacies. Unworkable. It doesn't just, copays and actual charge don't just apply to pharmacy services. It applies to all covered services in the contract. So the example of the emergency room, you're starting to get into wholesale expenses. And, you know, to run a pharmacy, you got to pay the pharmacist. You got to pay their, malpractice insurance. You got to pay for lights, all these other things. And plaintiff says, no, under this contract, I should be able to cherry pick that word, and it means actual charge for that bottle of pills from wholesale. I mean, we're not going off the internet. There's actually pharmacists.
So is the respondent's position that actual cost is ambiguous, but it's not if you read it as a whole?
Well, I suppose any phrase could be considered ambiguous if we take it out of context. And so we have these federal cases dealing with cancer, supplemental cancer insurance. And there it was in the coverage phrase. It had nothing to do with financial responsibility. It said, we will pay you actual charges for cancer treatment. And the question there was, are these actual charges that the member receives a bill from the provider, or is it what the provider accepted from the insurance company? So in other words, they had a provider contract that was a reduced rate. Those cases don't stand for the proposition that it's what the provider's wholesale expense was for the cancer service. So, you never look at that, the actual charge to the provider. It was either to the insurance company or to the member in that case, because there was absolutely no context for it other than this is what we cover. In that case, they said, it could go either way. Here, it is very clear that it's under the financial responsibilities of the member. It talks about the charges and the billing to the member, and it only can mean the actual charge to the member. And any other interpretation leads you into this, divorcing it from the language of the contract, and then leads you into these unworkable situations.
So if I show up and say, I need a Band-Aid, and they say, our usual copay for showing up for anything is $20. Doesn't make any difference if Group Health has bought boxcars of Band-Aids from China for 2 cents a piece, or whether they bought them from Costco for 10 cents a piece. The actual charge is what they decide to charge, not their cost.
Yes. And the actual charge in that circumstance isn't for the Band-Aid, because you're also seeing a doctor, you're entering a hospital, you're getting treatment. And if we were to divorce, you know, we would just divorce the whole thing from normal economics if we started to talk about wholesale costs. And I don't think the reasonable purchaser of insurance would understand it. Ah, this means wholesale costs. You know, there's not even a concept of that. And the other issue that I think is important is just to give an example of the out-of-pocket limit and why this is considered to be covered, and that is in terms of, you know, there's different copays throughout the contract for different services. For example, inpatient admission is $200, oral surgery $200, PT has different things. You could easily have a scenario where you have a number of services that amount to $2,000, and then you go into Rite Aid or group health, and you get your bottle of pills, and it costs $13.75, and you pay nothing because your out-of-pocket limit is exhausted. So it is covered. Thank you, Your Honor. I ask that the court affirm.
Okay. So this is insurance contract interpretation, not economics 101. There are economic models and there are speculations about other things that have nothing to do with what this contract says are completely irrelevant here, and it's what distracted the trial judge. I noticed that counsel was reading you the financial responsibility provision on CP 100 and left out the last sentence. Cost shares will not exceed the actual charge for that service. That, what is that service? That service is defined under drugs outpatient as prescription drugs for a supply of 30 days. So how can it be that the cost share will not exceed the actual charge for a bottle of pills when, in fact, the bottle of pills cost $3 to $5 and they're going to charge it $13.75 or $14.75 or whatever it is? This is unfair and deceptive to a reasonable insured. Our responsibility as an insured is not to figure out the economics of selling prescription drugs. It's not to figure out, you know, oh my gosh, what are we going to do about the poor pharmacist? The pharmacist has lots of ways to make money. If you don't want to be sued for misrepresenting coverage, then write it clearly. It would be very easy to say the actual charge is X. And you can define actual charge any way you want. The way that courts in this state interpret insurance contracts is to read the contract and say, oh, there's an undefined term. What does it mean? Well, it could certainly have at least two reasonable meanings here, at least two. And so we get the interpretation that's most favorable to us in every single case. That's black letter law in Washington. So if that's true, if you agree actual charge is ambiguous in this context, then you should reverse, you should grant summary judgment for us, and you should remand. I should also say, there is, of course, an opportunity to determine what the damages are. How were we damaged? There is an opportunity for an argument about whether we were damaged and how we were damaged and to what extent the damages would include more than the wholesale cost. That is not a question of contract interpretation. And it isn't. This is not about what their wholesale cost is or what their wholesale cost isn't. There's an opportunity for that, and we should have that opportunity. We shouldn't have been thrown out on summary judgment. So we ask you to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you both. Next up is Hedger versus Groeschel.